fascinating. Thank you for this conference. Jen's gone. Thank you, Jen, and everyone for putting this conference together. I actually work here at Liverpool, so it was a really nice opportunity to engage more with carceral geographies and theories around that. It's sort of been picked in by osmosis with Jen's presence, but it's really nice to sort of embrace it more. So today I'm just going to jump straight in with what I'm talking to you about. It's about a case study about the refugee crisis. I'm a migration specialist. A lot of my work has been on Polish migration, but in the last couple of years I've been looking at the European refugee crisis in the inverted commas, and particularly the tropes and representations. I still get irritated that we're a bit dismissive with representations. A lot of the power that's being oscillated at the moment is actually about it's past people as well. It's about who's making those representations. You know, it might be not trendy, but it's still very, very powerful and important. So I've been thinking about different sort of tropes, different storytelling, and what sort of political work is possible through storytelling with the European refugee crisis. And there is a carceral element which we'll get to. So I'm going to jump straight in with the case study. A great friend and colleague of mine, Katrin Herschelmann, at Leipzig Institute. We discovered these cartoons, which people might be familiar with, created by Positive Negatives. It's a sort of non-governmental organisation who use graphic narratives and animations to cut through different tropes, messages, all sorts of social justice issues. It's included the refugee crisis. But it's a really activist set up. It's about reaching out to people, it's about trying to invoke empathy and compassion, which I know is that one other discussion. They do it in very active ways. They try and use these cartoons for schools. It's a sort of really, I think it's a really good example of using storytelling and to do something positive and to cut through the negative tropes. So we looked at a particular example called A Perilous Journey, based on testimonies taken from three Syrian refugees who claimed asylum in Scandinavia. In July 2015. You might have seen these. They were serialised in The Guardian and the Norwegian Huffington Post. I don't speak Norwegian, but I'm glad to be funded by the Norwegian People's Aid, which I think is relevant, and I'll get to that in a minute, and who the illustrators. So I'm going to jump straight in with this as my case study, and we'll discuss the themes and sort of themes as we go. So first of all, we wrote paper on this together where we thought about what these cartoons would do in the bigger picture. We thought that they were an opportunity to create new decolonial archives, to shift that centre of knowledge, to look at Fortress Europe from a different perspective. We thought this was really important. We looked at how graphic narratives work in particular ways in reaching the audience, just the use of the facial expressions, the embodied narratives, how they're actually very powerful, so we considered this. We also thought about the limits. I mean, if it's funded by the Norwegian People's Aid, there's a limit to the decoloniality that they can embed. So we thought about this quite carefully. About things like the personalisation that's involved, the sort of enough to be able to reach people, to evoke compassion, but not so much that you're sentimentalising or you're overwhelming. It was, you know, to get that balance, to draw people in, but not to sort of force things on them. It's quite a fine line, I think. And also how the beauty of graphic narratives and cartoon strips, Jason Dittmar's written about this, you can't be a passive sort of viewer, audience, reader, watcher. You have to imagine what's between stills. And there's something very important about that. So the ones we looked at, they both hold back a bit on the violence that's involved, but because you have to imagine them between stills, as a viewer, you're drawn in. And we think that this is sort of integral to some of the power that we hold. And also, just at the time they came out, 2015, because they were offering different situations, different pictures of Muslim men who'd been getting a very raw deal in the press, Syrian refugees generally. It was actually pretty radical what they were trying to do, and it was about understanding and noticing that things like this, this soft arts and humanity, you know, can do something very, very powerful. So, that's the sort of overview of that you can see. Examples of the sort of holding back. There's discussions of war and crime and brutality, but also it comes through in some different ways. You're mediated, you see it through the children and playing with Lego. You're sort of, you're drawn in. They're very, very powerful cartoons. And then this one really struck me, Hasco inviting the interviewer, inviting people into his pop, completely subverting that trope of invasive men, you know, coming onto the shores, you know. We thought they were very, very clever. And just a couple of examples of what these narratives are able to do. So, when I thought about these, I thought more about, well, we thought more about that bigger picture, about power and knowledge and what they can do and the possibilities they have. But this has prompted me to think more about particularly the elements of perception or attention and carcerality that are in these cartoons. Because it's there and it's actually a really, really important part of the narratives. Two of the three stories in inverted commas, the asylum centre experiences that begin and end. And it's really, really important for how that story is framed and how we're living into that experience. I think they're held at an asylum reception centre. I don't think it's the detention centre, but it's not clear where they are. So there's a slight fuzziness about the sort of experience they're getting in the Norwegian system. I'm not an expert on the Norwegian detention system, but I've been reading about it. And I can see there's different issues with that, the bordering that goes on within that. But we are sort of given a quite benign experience anyway, which I'll come to. Now, with this asylum reception centre, there's a whole series of rights, access to services. You know, it's supposed to be a fairly sort of open approach to reception of asylum seekers, as far as we can possibly be involved in this. But it's very clear that there are restrictions. So the Norwegian Directorate of Immigration is in charge of this. And I was looking at their website, I was looking at their sort of, you know, reason for being, and it says very, very broadly, very, very directly, it's the UDI that decides where you live. So for new asylum seekers, people who've gone through the initial stage, there isn't much choice. There's a lot of discussion about passivity in this situation. And it might not be a prison in the sense that, you know, people are necessarily sort of barred in, but there is a real sense of restriction on a whole load of people. So that's the sort of context. So I was looking at, thinking about three themes, hopefully I've got time for this, that I think that these really show up and how these cartoons putting the whole story together draw it out. So if we think about these debates about detention and agency and, you know, how, you know, that balance between that overarching control but also how people assert themselves, what I think works well with these narratives is it is able to show the whole story. And that detention is seen in the context of the journey that's made and vice versa. So you take them together. So you have this sort of ambitious journey or this dangerous journey where people are fighting for themselves or fighting for each other. You know, they're traversing these dangerous terrains there. And they're the protagonist in this story, and that's really, really important. And then when you see them in the reception, I think you understand better the pain of that passivity. Well, I think you understand the frustration better, and I think that they work very well side by side. And we know that this issue of dependency and passivity in this reception. So I think that because the cartoons give you time to give you the backstory and the personality, it hits you harder when you reach the end. So this is just a sort of overview still, and I'm going to come down. So this is Journey. But he's traversing. He's, you know, this cat and mouse game across Europe with different, you know, different law enforcement agencies, border control agencies. But the thing that really stands out here, I don't know if you can see, is where he's standing. And they're having a pause in his journey, and they're camping, and he's taking in the view. He's taking in the scenery. You know, he's feeling how beautiful it is. They're hearing the birds. To me, that's a really, really important part of balancing this narrative. And seeing the embodied experience, the emotional experience of that, and you get a much more rounded sort of view of what's going on. And then he's sort of rounded up and interpreted. So that's one thing, it's sort of balancing that agency and that the sort of the control and seeing it in a nuanced way, seeing that they're part and parcel, and that whole experience of being a refugee is both at the same time, just sort of morphs as it goes. For me, I think they do something very powerful as well, is the time it takes to slow down that discussion. When we've got this sort of almost frantic journey of, you know, crossing the sea on boats and, you know, trying to hide from people, that when the narrative is in the reception centre, it slows down. And that gives you a chance to be more direct in talking about the emotional talk. That's when we hear the stories about, I miss my family. And you see that frustration, you see the limbo. Deirdre Conlon, if you talked about this, the sort of not knowing when it's going to end. They don't describe a happy ending on those people as well. If it's not a happy ending, they don't try and make it a happy ending. And also, Johnny Darling talks about, you know, just asserting the presence of refugees in Western spaces. I think that's another powerful thing as well. It's locating that experience and saying, look, people are here. You know, this is where they are. This is what's happening. So, Mohammed, this one always jumps out to me particularly. We see him, you know, this sort of brave young man leaving a traumatized situation. And then we see him here, like, I miss my family so much. And he's just a young man who's a bit lost and sad. And you know, it really reaches out the way the story develops. And here as well, you can see, you know, all he's in Hungary. They built a razor wire fence. He's travelled across Europe, and then he gets to snowy Oslo, and then he's here, sat, you know, in this room, you know, missing people, not knowing what to do, trying to ring his father. It balances both. You can't take one or other away. And that's what these cartoons are able to do, because they can take the whole story. Mohammed, at the end, still waiting for the decision. Khalid receives asylum. But they're not imposing an happy ending, which I think is really important. So that was another theme. The third theme, I think, the final theme, I think, comes out, is the borders and boundaries are necessarily important for carceral geographies in particular. This is what the cartoons are able to do, because of the visual element. There are physical borders and there are social borders and experiences that are depicted really clearly in these cartoons. And I think it took the prompting to go back and look again to see how important this is, how I think conscious actually this is in how they put together. The reception centres are depicted, well, they're drawn in the forest setting. Now this is just really references the sort of Norwegian relationship with nature and that asymmetric access to it. So you've got the person who's being retained, who cannot access it on a curfew basis. And you've got the prison guard, the benign, lovely, Norwegian, liberal, friendly prison guard, having a conversation about how beautiful the forest is. But you know that they don't have equal access to that forest. And again, you don't have to be told that. You see it and you feel it. So you see the freedoms are there, but you see how they're distributed. And also you get a sense of the isolation, the geographical isolation of these reception camps. How, you know, how difficult it is going to be to leave those and join the Norwegian society. And I think there's a danger that we get quite a benign sort of Norwegian experience of reception here. It's a bit fuzzy where people are, obviously, for ethical reasons. It's not explicit. But I wonder whether it's quite as you know, peaceful as it's made out. But you do see the sort of the frustration. So here we have Khalid, you know, talking about worrying about his friends and family, put together with different people, you know, in this confined space, and you just sense his sort of pain, that you sense him not knowing what to do. A lot of those drawings are deliberately done, like to put you in that space of the reception centre, and you sense that frustration. And I've got a close up here, I'll go back to the. So I've been tortured half to death here, I still have to meet a bedtime curfew. You know, it encapsulates, you know, all the experience. And, you know, they're standing there talking about this beautiful forest, but you know that it's not an equal footing. You can pretend, you can have this sort of convivial encounter in a reception centre, but you know that that's not what's really going on. So here, it's very, very clear. This is that narrative slowing down. The other parts of this story, you see him, you know, doing all these active things, and, but here you see it, the enormity of his situation and the frustration he needs. So this was sort of my first foray really into thinking more sort of directly about what that means, what that perception experience means. And of course, this is a very particular example. The point of these cartoons is that they're consciously doing political work. So I think that what they do is, what they've done here is they've got that balance. They've held back from from the tropes, this is not about angry Muslim men, this is not about passive people who are a drain on the state, who are waiting to be looked after. And that's the work that they have to do in these cartoons. And I think what they've managed to do by putting the whole story together works. I think it works really extremely well. I think that I'm just a convert to these sort of the possibilities of these sorts of narratives. I realise they're probably quite limited in their reach, but they're going out into schools with these, and I think that there is something about being able to show the whole experience that actually highlights what is very specific about the intervention. Thank you.
Inadvertent crossover to start by talking about storytelling, which was obviously a term that came up in the first paper as well. Any questions at all? Hi.
Hi. Thanks for this. It's very interesting. It's not so much a question, more as liking to think with you on these narratives. When I was looking at especially the story of Ali, I thought it was nice when you mentioned being into sort of this gut tonight. The graphic novels where there is an in-between in the scenes and you need to do the imaginative work. I think it might be really nice to focus on the fact that this graphic itself was all black in this particular graphic novel. So there's a lot of black doctrine going on, which is not necessarily usual, I think, in graphic novels, is that all the backgrounds are black. And there's a lot of simulation, I feel, sort of a experience of the attention or small blocks. I'm sorry, I have to apologize. I'm not this person, so I'm going
wild on these
representations. Because I think the form in which it is presented says a lot, I think, about the point that we want to make.
Yeah.
It's that there are all these tiny squares, and there's all the only times when it opens up, there's either just visuals, or the visuals are in the blocks, and when the blocks are small, there's a lot of narration in that side. Sort of suggest like a darker looking back on an experience maybe that can't really be directly put into words, right? Because all these letters on the back are all flashbacks.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so I think temporary, in terms of time, this is a very complicated novel.
Yeah.
It's several experiences of how you get to this detention center and spread out from there.
I can't take chairs privilege at this point,
which
I will take because I had a very similar question. I just wanted to kind of actually jump on the back of that, which was I was thinking a lot about colour as we went through these, and I think that kind of really sort of bounces off that and how much interpretation you've done around actually the use of the colours here, because you talked about this sort of sense that we're not getting this kind of as we would with a comic book.